like everybody to take a noisemaker here. We're going to hand these out. You have a job to do today. While Kevin's giving these out, what we're going to do today is hear the story of Esther, but the way the story is generally told, with a few variations. The story of Esther is a story that's told on the Jewish holiday of Purim, and I don't know how much you know about Purim, but it is usually held, well, this past year was in March. We're a little off calendar here. But we ran across a story, and so we might as well do it today. It's the great Jewish holiday of, I must tell you, we're not going to do this here today, but of drinking large quantities of alcohol, and dressing up in costume, and making a lot of noise. We're going to do the noise part. I know you might have preferred the other, but we're going to do the noise part. Yes, and no one's been fasting either. We didn't do that part. Now, I'm going to tell you when to use your noisemakers, because this is what happens in this Jewish holiday. The story of Esther is told, and as the story of Esther is told, every time you get to the villain, you are to make noise to try to drown out his name. Now, his name is Haman, or Haman, depending, I don't know how you pronounce it. And every time we're going to come across his name, I'm going to go like this. And I'll say the name, but your job is to make about 3 or 4 seconds of loud noise. So you can drown out the name. All right? As I tell you the story of Esther, that's your job today. I think we all have noise makers now, and we're ready to go. Now, I will tell you before we start that this story is more or less a folk tale. It's supposed to take place in a real historical period, in the 400 BC period. Persia is in charge of Israel, and this is a story from the Persian court. But the king who's mentioned in it is not a real king that anybody has ever heard of. He may be a stand-in for one of the Persian kings, that's unclear. But this is really historically a very dicey tale. This is meant, like the Book of Ruth often is meant, it's kind of just a tale. And the reason it is told, as you can see in the scripture reading, the reason it's told every year is it's a very story about being saved, liberated, taken care of in a way that an oppressed people would love to hear a story like this. It starts off with the king of Persia in a capital city. And the capital city is undergoing a big feast. It's a place called Shushan. And in Shushan, they had 6 months. Tells us something about the partying nature of the Persian royalty. 6 month party, full of much drinking. And the last 6 days, they let everybody in town also join in. Nice of them, after 5.5 months, to let the other people join in for about 6 days. And on the last day, the king, who is, one can imply, in his cups by this point, decides that he wants to show off how beautiful his queen is. So he orders Vashti, who is his queen, to come into the room of men in the area, and show herself off. Now, what state she was supposed to be in, something the rabbis have been debating for centuries, but nonetheless, it was a humiliating act, and she refused. Well, the king, it turns out, had a concubine and a lot of other women around, so he just basically stripped her of her queenhood, but he wanted to replace her. And rather than going to his concubine to replace her, he decides to hold essentially a nation or kingdom-wide beauty contest. And he sets out a thing. Actually, this king is so ineffectual, he never does anything on his own initiative. Somebody always suggests something for him to do. And so somebody says, why don't you find the most beautiful woman in the country? The thing about the Hebrew Bible is whenever you look for the most beautiful woman, she always ends up being Hebrew for some odd reason. And the Hebrew Bible has kind of a motif that foreign men find Hebrew women irresistible. So it turns out that one of the winners of this contest is a woman who's Esther. She is Jewish, but she doesn't tell anyone that she's Jewish. It's a big secret. It's important that it be a secret throughout most of the story. But nonetheless, she is brought with other women, and they each are attempting to find favor with the king. Again, the story doesn't tell you how. Use your imagination. And eventually, and they are also, they have spa treatment for a year. They get bathed in perfume and ointment, so every molecule of their skin supposedly is perfect. And then they parade before the king, and they are with the king, and he finally picks Esther to be his new queen. And she has some mixed feelings about this, but Esther is, in fact, an orphan. Her parents have died, and her guardian is a man named Mordecai. Mordecai is actually her cousin. And Mordecai says, you have to do this. You have to get on the inside. It's very important. Don't tell anybody that you're Jewish, but just go on the inside and be part of it. So she does. She becomes Queen Esther. Mordecai, on the other hand, hangs around outside the palace gate because he wants to keep an eye on her. He wants to make sure she's okay and everything else is working well. And when he's outside the gate, he hears about a plot to kill the king from two of the members of court. And he reports the plot. And the plot is foiled. And his deeds are written down in the big kind of log of courtly things that happen. But the king is never told who does this. So Mordecai actually saves his life. Now, it turns out the king has a prime minister who evidently is one of the richest men other than him in the kingdom. And the prime minister's name is Haman. Very good. I like that. Well, he's very upset. I'm talking here about Haman. Is very upset because when royalty and the royal staff walks through the into the gate, everyone's supposed to bow down in subservience. But the Jews actually have an exemption because they don't bow down to anyone because it was seen as they bow down to their God and that's it. But Haman is very upset by the fact that Mordecai doesn't bow down to him. And he begins to launch in his mind a plot against this guy, Mordecai. And the way he does it is he goes to the king and he says, you know what we ought to do? There are people who are your enemies in the kingdom. And we need to get rid of these people. They are the Jews. And so the king, because he's so pliable, essentially then has an edict that he's going to go out and kill all the Jews in the kingdom. He has orders to do that. And they decide that they're going to do it on the 13th day of Adar, which is a Jewish month that isn't part of the Jewish calendar. And they decide on the date by throwing lots, which is essentially like throwing dice or something like that, by chance, by lot. Or by Pur, which is where the word Purim comes from. Mordecai hears about the plan, and he talks to Esther, and he says to Esther, you have to do something to stop this. Because not only will it kill me, and it will kill you, but it will kill all the Jewish people if this is allowed to proceed. And she says to him, I don't know whether I can do it or not, because I am not supposed to ask the king for anything unless I am asked first. So the king has to turn to me and say, what do you want? Only then can I make a request. And Mordecai says, I don't care. You have to do something. So Esther says, let me think about it. In the meantime, we're going to fast. I'm going to fast for 3 days. you're going to fast for 3 days. The people are going to fast for 3 days. And at the end of it, I'll have a plan. Well, her plan is that she's going to throw a feast, another drinking feast. They called it a drinking feast, actually. A drinking feast for the king. And she's going to invite Haman. So he's very excited about this. He gets to actually go to the king. They don't know what's up. Now, at this particular time, at this feast, first feast, the queen says to the king says, "What do you want?" to his wife. "I'll give you anything. What do you want?" She says, "I want another feast." So that's, he says, "Okay, in that case, you can have one." In the meantime, Haman is very irritated by Mordecai, even more than usual, and he begins to plot a way to get rid of him. And without the king's knowledge, he either builds a gallows, like it says in here, or he builds a giant spike to impale him on. It's a little unclear what this thing is, but it could be a 60-foot spike, if you can imagine it, at least going to the top of the thing. It's his wife's suggestion, by the way. Now, one night the king can't sleep, and he's wandering around his palace, and so he decides, maybe in order to get to sleep, because it would certainly put me to sleep, that the records of the daily life of the kingdom be read to him. And in that record is the fact that his life was saved by Mordecai. He had no idea, and he says, "Who is this guy who saved my life?" And they go, "This guy's Mordecai. He was right out there." So now it gets really interesting. The king, Haman, comes before the king, and the king says, "What would you do if you really wanted to honor somebody in the kingdom?" Well, Haman thinks that he's going to honor him. He says, "Well, I would put the guy on a royal horse, and I would put him in royal robes, and I'd parade him around the courtyard." And the king says, "Good idea, because I want to honor this guy Mordecai in exactly that way." All of a sudden, Haman is very worried and upset that things are not turning out the way he had planned. But nonetheless, he's still having the gallows or the spike built. Well, the second banquet comes along, and that's the scripture for today. Esther comes into the banquet, and the king, who is drunk a little bit by this time, says to her, "I'll give you anything you want. What do you want?" At which point she blows the whistle. She says, "I'm going to get killed. And my people are all going to get killed. And it's because of your order." And the king is irate and says, "Who's responsible for this?" You know who she says? Haman. And I milked that one a little, didn't I? And so the king is irate. He walks out of the room. He can't handle the information. He walks out of the room, in which case Haman throws himself at Queen Esther and says to her, "You've got to help me." But the king walks back in, and he thinks what he sees in front of him, because he's at her feet, and he thinks that Haman is putting the moves on his wife, on his queen, and he is irate and orders him killed on the very same spike or gallows that he had for Mordecai. Sure enough, this is what happens. And Haman is killed, and Mordecai takes his job. Now, there's a historical inaccuracy in the story, because it says in the story the king can't take back his original orders, which is not true, actually, in history. But nonetheless, it works in the story. So what he does instead is he says the Jews have a right to defend themselves against the oncoming attack. And so they do. They kill Haman's 8 sons and 75,000 other Persians and are surviving. Mordecai then writes all this information down, and that's the end of the story. But that's not really the end of the story, you see, because, well, here's what's going to happen. I don't think, you know, I mean, I love this story because it's so much fun. Now, granted, it's not subtle. I mean, I'm sure we could be compassionate and we could say that Haman had his good and bad points and that we need to understand him. But in a story like this, this is more like just a fun cartoon story, you know? And it is good sometimes, I think, particularly for people like the Jews who have been persecuted so much throughout their history, who have been, in fact, persecuted over and over and over again. It's important to have a day where you have some fun with getting your comeuppance and with identifying evil. Because one of the things that's very clear in the story is that Haman is an evil, evil guy. And he does horrible things. And calling him out year after year is, I think, a way of saying that there is good and evil in the world. I mean, maybe shades of gray a lot of times, but there are times when there are evil things that happen. And we can triumph over that. Now, I know that there are some who feel like in America that Christians are the persecuted group. But I don't think so. I think, you know, Jews know persecution in a way that I will never know. And so I don't want to judge what they've done. But what I do is want to move it into the current time. So I'm just going to, whenever I throw up my hands, I found this today, this week. The total amount of money that Wall Street handed out in bonuses alone last year was double the total income of all minimum wage workers in America. Just the bonuses that Wall Street handed out. Did you know that there was a car maker named Volkswagen that actually had their emission standards computers lie and spew more carbons into the atmosphere? And this is Volkswagen that we're talking about. And it is time to just simply say that there are certain acts that are just downright evil. A man named Jeff Almer in 2008 brought his Mother's Day card as usual, but his mother was no longer around. He sent it instead to a man named Stuart Parnell. Stuart Parnell was head, I don't know whether you read this story this week, he was the man who ran the Peanut Corporation of America. He was sentenced to prison this week. And inside the card, Jeff Almer wrote, "I do not know where to send this since my mother is no longer alive, so I'm sending it to you, the person who is responsible for where she is today. This is a woman who was 72 years old, survived lung cancer and a brain tumor, but had gotten salmonella poisoning from peanut butter. Peanut butter that the Peanut Corporation of America knew had salmonella in it, but they didn't want to lose the profit from the peanut butter, so they actually falsified test results, sent it out into the world, 9 people were dead. And the person who was the head of the company, who knew all about it, was a man named Stuart Parnell." Undoubtedly, you heard the story this week of the owner of Turing Pharmacy, Martin Shkreli, who took a drug that was used to treat a condition by a parasite. Nearly a quarter of the U.S. population have it. However, people who are really vulnerable are unborn children or pregnant women and people with AIDS with compromised immune systems. He raised the price of that pill from $13.50 to $750 a pill. All in the name, as Martin Shkreli says, of capitalism. He said, "I'm a capitalist." They've now lowered the price of the pill. They won't say by how much. But the vulnerable people now had to pay at least several thousand percent more for that drug. I could go on and on. But I think what I'm saying here is that there is a time and a place for people in the church to say that there's names that we blot out, that there are names that we hold in judgment, that there are certain acts that are just wrong, certain people who do bad things, and that we need to be the voice that makes noise when we do that. We need to be the people who stand up and say, that is wrong. That should happen no longer. Pope Francis in the service to the homeless this week said, it is important that today, as in the past, the voice of faith continue to be heard, for it is a voice of fraternity and love which tries to bring out the best in each person, in each society. When that does not happen, it is time for all of us to do something, and that is to make noise. Amen.